Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Hey, pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hello, pod people. Leo Phillips here. We are back with another edition of This Must Be The Gig, your little backstage pass to the world of live music. Every single week, we bring you fascinating conversations from the beating heart of the performance scene with some of, I think, the most exciting names on this gigantic, big, spongy globe. I talk to my guests all about passion. We talk about their first concerts, insights into the creative mind during this truly unusual and important time, and everything in the juicy center. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Anna Perrott from one of my favorite bands, Heinz.
It's like kind of like the way we face all that bullshit is like yelling louder than them, you know?
I covered them many, many years ago at a festival in Barcelona called Primavera Sound, which, if you are a constant listener, you know I blab and blush about all the time. And a little bit about this band, if you haven't heard of them, the Madrid-based rockers actually first made their name for raucous live shows and really, really electric garage rock right off of their 2016 debut, Leave Me Alone. As the years have gone by, though, they've further refined and enriched their sound, growing more confident and boisterous without losing any edge. And last week, which is this week, which is any week, whenever you are listening to this, it marks the release of their third record, The Prettiest Curse, which expands the band's sound to include more instruments, more production, and a whole lot more energy. In this conversation, which actually was recorded in February, which was approximately 1,000 years ago, I spoke with Anna about telling off misogynists in this very, very complex industry we're in, starting Heinz as a two-piece originally, why it took longer to catch on in their native Spain than the rest of the world, and so much more. So let us not be delayed. This is me and Anna. Please, I hope you're taking care of yourselves. And just a reminder that Black Lives Matter movement is not just a hashtag. It's not just a trend. Solidarity is not a trend. Continue. Keep fighting. There is change happening. I promise you. Keep going. If you need more resources and more essential reading, please refer to our Facebook pages and our Instagram pages and check it out and enjoy. How do you prepare yourself mentally and emotionally to go on such a long tour?
Well, first of all, I think the knowledge that you kind of guarantee you're going to be okay. You know what I mean? You kind of have to be okay with the fact that sometimes it's going to be really, really hard. So it's pretty much, I mean, the good part about now is we've had 1 year of break of touring for the first time ever in like 6 years. So it's been good in the sense of like, now I'm kind of excited about touring again and stuff, but then at the same time it's bad because we've had a life, you right. know, and like a routine and stuff, and now it's like, okay, bye.
You everything know what's I learned on the for other a year. Side, yeah.
Yeah, but the good thing to me, like, to me, what's really like exciting me the most about this album is like, it's pretty different. And I don't know, it's just like, we're singing more in Spanish and that's really refreshing. Or like, I'm playing keyboards for the first time. And like, fucking 4 months ago, I didn't play any keyboards at all. I didn't even own a keyboard. And then now I'm playing it live. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it's exciting because it's a bit different. So it feels like a change, you know?
And that you, on the last record, it was just guitar. That's all it was. And that was kind of like an idea from all of you to just, it was an intentional, conscious decision.
Totally.
So now going into this record, The Prettiest Kiss, how did you learn how to play keys? Had you played them when you were younger or was this really
the
first
never.
Time?
Literally never. Nothing. It's crazy. I had no idea. And then I was just like curious and a friend of mine, like, she had some keyboards at her place. And I was like, oh, this is fun. Like, literally playing like ding dong, ding dong. Okay, it's so, like, seriously very bad. And I was like, hey, this looks fun. And she's like, hey, your birthday is coming up in 2 weeks. Do you want anything specific? Or I can get all of our friends to pitch in a little bit and we'll just give you a keyboard. And I was like, oh, that could be fun, like, for the long-term future so I can start. And then as this record was coming along and stuff, we're like, oh my god, like, I'm actually gonna have to play this very soon and very well.
So what did you do? Did you get lessons or did you just play more often?
Just me. I mean, to be fair, it's like very intuitive to me. I don't know if it is to anyone. I haven't talked about it to enough people yet, but it's just like, guitar is very hard to understand instrument in the sense of like the chords, how you play different chords don't make that much sense compared to keyboards. Like, keyboards, it's like super easy to find a whole chord. I mean, not super easy, but you know what I mean? It's like, it's way more intuitive. And I don't know, it's just, obviously I'm guessing because I've already having the knowledge of guitar where you're like already used to separate the rhythm hand and the solo hand, then that's kind of the same in piano.
Yeah. Why did this album call for the piano and call for all those other instruments? Because it's such a dense record. There's a sense that you've embraced these pop songs, yeah, you know, like on good Bad Times and of course Just Like Kids and Boy. Like, there's this really wonderful density to it. It's such a great record.
It's
so fucking good, and I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I'm like fully, I'm throwing my weight behind this record. It's so great.
This is making me so happy. Seriously, thank you.
It's not only about taking risks for the four of you. I think it was also about making sure that you are coming out as though people are being introduced to you for the first time and yeah, you're trying things that are new, and you can hear the excitement on the record as well. You can hear that you are playing in a rhythm that is a little bit different to what you've done, but obviously it still sounds like you. It's not like it's
that's
totally
how I
different.
Feel I feel yeah, like it's yeah, just like more Heinz than Heinz, you know. It's
exactly
like,
yeah.
I think if like we would listen to it, like if I would put this album to Anna, the Anna of like 6 years ago when we started yeah, this band, I would be really, really proud. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's been like, so I think every kind of like the past two records were kind of like a picture, like a representation of how the band was at the moment. So obviously the first one is super lo-fi, DIY, kind of like messy. And, you know, like it's really like a baby record and really like fresh. And you could tell we were just starting the band, just started playing our instruments, etc. And then the second one was like after all these years of touring and seeing bands and playing live and stuff. So it's more like rocky, like proper, like we tried, like you were saying before, just to have the instruments we have live, and the recordings were like with our own guitars that we played live, you know, everything as close as a live show possible. So then now, obviously, for the first time, we've stopped and we've had like a year where we were like actually sitting down and being like, okay, should we investigate with that, with this? We've tried like a bunch of people too, because it's not, obviously it wasn't the first person we met that was as awesome as Jen, who produced this album and made our ideas and craziness happen. So it was just like, it's really exciting because for the first time, this I think is like another step. It's not just a picture, it's more like it's a picture of our imagination, you know what I mean? Not the reality, just where we would want to go. And then because we created that and like we let ourselves totally flow, we did something like somehow a bit bigger because it's not as real and reachable. But then I think something that was really good with working with Jen, the producer, she really liked our kind of like punk attitude. So she's like a super polished and dope producer, but that is really punk and fun. So I think we made like the perfect match where she like made everything bigger and helped us, but then at the same time kept saying to Carlota, why don't you yell this? And I want more backing vocals. Come on, everyone in the room now, just yelling whatever you want. Literally, she was like, just yell whatever you want. And like most of it, it's actually on the record. Like if you hear
you can
some
hear.
Of that,
yeah.
Right? It's like mess and wildness, which also represents us, you know, which I find is really cool, like the middle point.
I think there's that particular youthfulness. There's like half buried vocals on Boy, that track.
Yeah, exactly,
and it feels so real. It feels like seeing you guys live as well. I think that that's also something that a lot of fans will really appreciate, which again, I mean, I'm speaking about these imaginary people, but I think more so than anything, I'm sure you appreciate that you'll be able to do that live. You know, 100%. You might not. You
While
might
we
not...
were recording it, we were already like, right. Oh my God, I can't wait to play this live.
Yeah.
Like,
tell me, so tell me which song you're really looking forward to.
There's actually a lot. Like, you were saying, like, Boy for sure, because it's like the most, like, warrior kind of like chanter. Like, I love that one. But then I really like, because we've been already like rehearsing it and stuff, I really like playing Just Like Kids, Meow.
Because
it's super powerful. And I think, like, when you see us performing that song, because obviously it's like that song, it's all about what's wrong with the music industry and being a girl in a band, and just like all the comments we constantly hear from random people, strangers, industry, like just everything we kept hearing. And it's so empowering to sing it because it's like super fun and punk. It's like kind of like the way we face all that bullshit is like yelling louder than them, you know? It's like super cool to play live.
Like you go loud, we go louder.
Exactly.
I can't wait to hear Just Like Kids live. I think there's a lot of times when people are apprehensive about, you know, speaking out, not only speaking out, but saying, repeating what others have said. Because sometimes that triggers me. If somebody has said something really mortifying and like really rude, I don't even want to repeat what they said.
I know, because you don't want to, you don't want to think about it again, right?
Yeah, you don't want to give it energy, because then it becomes this like beast that you can't tame.
Yeah.
Having this in the structure of the song, in the melody that you've put it in, there's a sense of we hear what you're saying and we don't agree and fuck you.
And fuck you, fuck you, fucker. Yeah, totally. I mean, it was like pretty relieving to write it, to be, and pretty easy. Like, because, you know, we were used, like in the past two albums, it's mainly all the songs were talking about love and personal relationships and stuff. And like in this one, for the first time, we're talking about a whole other world that is also happening to us. And it's as important, you know, like obviously that is a very big issue and a big reality in Hein's life. And it has always been like criticism and judgment and stuff. But yeah, like when we wrote it and stuff, it's like very fun to play. And it's like, I don't know, it proves the whole point of like, you think you're clever because you're judging someone, but the one that's actually clever is the one that's doing something without feeling judged or without thinking about someone judging them, you know?
Yeah, it takes a lot to put yourself out there as a woman, as a, you know, non-binary person, as a person of color, anyone in the minority within this horrible music industry sometimes gets put in a place where you do receive the worst type of judgment.
Right.
And especially because you aren't from the US or the UK.
Oh my God.
There's always there's always that barrier. I feel it too, even. There's always that barrier of, well, do you know enough? Like, are you know, are you the person to be singing to me on a stage?
Do you deserve it as much as I would? Yeah, totally. But at the same time, like that feeling that you're saying, it's just like also, I always get this sense of like, kind of like I have to talk about this, not on a pressure way, just like it really motivates me. Because like, for example, the way I sometimes when I'm feeling down or someone like whatever, when I need someone to help me or something like that, apart from the girls, obviously, I find like a very comforting place in like biographies written by women, like in the like just from fucking Lily Allen, which obviously is more like contemporary, to like Patti Smith or Viv Albertine, or like just like stories, you know, just like biographies of their own stories of other females that have done it and have gone through the same and the same criticism. So if I feel so good and empowered when I read them and when I read all the bullshit they have to go through, that I feel like if I write songs or potentially in the future a book or whatever, you know, like someone might hear, some other girls might listen to this and feel like, fuck, they're also going through that. Because like, obviously, if we don't talk about it, it feels like it doesn't happen. But right. It's just like so little, like right now, the amount of women in the music industry are like still a vast minority, right? So it's like the ones that are going through this and like suffering this like fucking harassment of judging and stuff. It's just like if we don't talk about it, no one will know because there's not that many people going through it. And that's one of the main things I think that could totally destroy a project, like any musical project, because like it is a lot of pressure and like, I don't know if I would have been able to be here if it wasn't because of being on a girl band. Like if I was a solo artist, it was like so, so terrible and like so harsh that I don't know if I would have kept going with it. Like you need to be very sure of yourself to like pull up with all the bullshit, you know?
I love that you mentioned Patti Smith. You brought up such a great point of the fact that we really do need to just have a voice. So even if you are feeling that you, I don't know, are confused by your own feelings or you don't want to ruffle anyone's feathers, you don't want to create drama, I think that just being able to speak up, like she said something like, I remember a quote from the book. She said something like, everything distracted me, but most of all, myself. And I think
I just got the goosebumps.
You know what I mean? Like, but that's why it stood out. My memory is so shocking. So this is like certain things hit and then they stay forever. And then I forget like names of loved ones. But I think that I can't remember the context essentially of what she was saying, but I remember me thinking about that quote in, if you want to say something, it isn't about like, what does it feel like being a woman in music? It's more about like, this is what's happening every day. If I'm writing about relationships and love, this is akin to that. You know, it's not like you've chosen a different path. You're still writing about the things that matter to you.
Oh, 1,000,000%. And like, every relationship has two sides of the coin, right? And like, if we miss the female perspective of anything, love, politics, environmental, like just anything, if you're missing a female point, you're missing half of the world's point, you know? So it's just not right. It's not true.
So Just Like Kids is named after the biography.
No, but that is such a cool thing. That is such a cool connection. I'm going to start lying now and just say that.
I think you should. I was just going to say, like, if anyone asks, you should be like, well, I read this biography by Patti Smith. Oh, my God.
You know what? I didn't even, like, it is my fucking favorite book ever. Like, my number one book. Wow. Thank you for giving me this idea because I'm definitely going to lie from now on.
Oh, go for it. It's so much easier. And then all the like really lazy journalists will be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah.
There's so much culture. There's so much culture.
Totally. But so talking about having your space, do you feel like when you were making music prior to Hines, do you feel like that was a step that you couldn't even envision yourself being a part of this all-woman group? Like, did you feel supported in your local scene before you got together with the other girls?
Hines is everyone's first band ever. So I literally didn't have, like, when I was saying before, like, when we started the band, we were literally going on stage for the first time and, like, picking up guitars for the first, like, really, really new at everything.
Wow.
But, when we started, especially like we were so young and like, as I was saying, like so like fresh and new and like we made a lot of mistakes and that was fine. That was kind of like the best part of Hines back then, I think, was like the freshness and like that spirit of like, fuck yeah, we're doing this. Oh my God, like we don't care. And just that like kind of punk attitude and obviously the songs. But I think that was one of the things that stood out the most out of other bands and like got our attention in the UK. Mainly was the UK first, and then it was America was like really close by, like the States. But no, like for 2 years or 3 years when we were like touring and like selling out venues everywhere in the world, we were like the most hated band in Spain ever. Like,
why?
Because we were girls, we were happy, we were young, and we were doing something no one has done before in Spain, which is breaking the internet in the international scene. Like, it is normal to have bands from France to go to the UK or the UK to go to America and stuff, but like Spain, kind of like up until a few years ago, which makes no sense, right?
Because Spanish is honestly one of the, what is the percentage of Spanish speaking people?
I don't know,
America?
Like close to half.
It's got to be. I mean, everyone that I meet can speak Spanish and or is Spanish first language. Like, it's. I know there's different.
It was more. I mean, there is also like a very big difference of like kind of like style of music. It's like pretty specific. Right. Like, I don't know. It was, I guess, that and that because no one had done it before. No one dreamed about doing it. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't ourselves when we started, and like we had like our first manager was a Spanish manager, and like when we met with him, he was like, "So, what are your goals? What do you want to do?" And we literally were saying, "We just want to play like around the corner, or maybe like go in a van for 2 hours and play in this city." You know, like didn't even dream about what actually happened to us. So it's just like there was also a sense in Spain of like, oh, if they're doing it, it means they are stealing my spot to do it. Kind of like that feeling of there can only be one band being an international band. And if I don't like it, then I hate it because it's representing the whole country or something like that. Like, it was a lot of pressure for a band that started for fun. Like, you know, like we
had. Right, you didn't have that. You weren't going into it being like, we are going to be famous. You went
into it with a different idea. Doing what made us happy and what we were good at, you know?
I mean, that's exactly why you are where you are.
Pause the podcast! It's time to step away from the conversation with Anna from Heinz ever so briefly to share an extra special segment. We typically like to share our favorite live show or live stream of the week, but we wanted to continue on putting a spotlight where it's most needed and instead highlight an organization we think you should contribute to. This week, we're highlighting Brave Space Alliance, the first Black-led, trans-led LGBTQ center on the south side of Chicago. Brave Space is dedicated to creating and providing resources, programming, and services for LGBTQ individuals that are culturally competent and affirming. Their goal is to build toward the liberation of all oppressed peoples and organize community-sourced resources in areas of health and wellness, visibility and expansion, bravery and solidarity. Just this week, we contributed every cent we've earned through our podcasting platform Anchor to Brave Space Alliance and encourage you to make a tangible difference by contributing whatever you can as well. Your contributions will go towards funding the organization's transformative community programs and providing free resources for people who really need them. So go out there and donate. But for now, let us return to this week's interview. Back to Lior and Anna. Enjoy.
That really resonates because I think about where I come from in South Africa and think about the, you know, the city and the music industry there. There are so few chances for a band to make it, quote unquote, to break that barrier where they're not seen as only a South African band or only a band from Spain or Madrid. Yeah. And for them to make it, you're right, other bands who've been slogging away for a long time turn and they're like, why are you making it and not us? Which is, again, such a strange thing because if you look at other small, you know, if you look at Australia, that music industry, okay, yes, they have a lot of money being pumped into that industry from the government. And they've got a lot of support. But I feel like they're all very supportive of one another. So I
think
don't know
so
if
too.
It's like a, is it linked
I
to?
I think it's a bit of everything. Yeah. And like also a bit of culture here. We're like, we like to kind of like judge each other, which is, it's bad. And like, obviously it looks like I'm just talking shit about my culture and I love it.
You're just talking.
One of the worst part of it. Yeah. Is that it's like, gossip and just like talking shit about that. It's kind of like part of the culture, which sucks. And like, obviously we're very far away as well on the sexism section. Like we're like not even close to being equal, like worse than in other places in Europe. So it's just, I think it was a little bit of everything. Like in here, it's like, you have to prove your point and like be solidified as a band and like play without looking at the guitar and like be the best of everything for respect and do the wildest solo, things like that. When actually I felt like when we started in the UK, what they liked was the total opposite. You know, like they've seen already people playing great. They've seen that. They've seen that. They're just looking for something else. That doesn't prove a point. You're not a musician just because you know how to play with your eyes closed, you know?
But how did you then make sure that it didn't affect you? Or do you feel like there was a point where not having that support from the local scene, did that affect you at all?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely affected us in the sense of like, it literally made us cry a lot of time.
You know? Awful.
Like, just like, you know, when you start in any project, especially when it's like something artistic, you're like putting, well, not even artistic to be fair, just something very personal, I guess, or something you really want to do or you dream about doing. It's like you put a lot of yourself into it, right? So it's like whenever you get a criticism on that, it just hurts, even if you're not a young girl that is starting. Like, it just hurts. But especially back then, we started like kind of like believing what they were saying. And like believing we weren't good and believing, because, you know, when you hear it fucking like a million times, you start to think, maybe I'm the one that's crazy, you know. But we were lucky enough to have like the international support. So it felt like when we were here, it was horrible. But when we were touring, we were reminded by fans, people, industry and stuff. It's like, oh, no. OK, so I'm actually liked somewhere, even if back home they hate me. Like, they fucking love this and we're selling records here and there. We're going to Japan. I don't know, you know, like. We were lucky enough to have that support from outside.
And also having that mind, I think as a creative, as an artist, whether or not you started out wanting to get to a certain point or having a certain goal, I think that it still shows that your combined attitudes and also your attitude is so powerful when you just forget, you can take in what everybody's saying, but you're also looking to a point where you're looking for the positive as well. So like, even in that one sentence that you just said, you were still looking toward a place that people have accepted you because you've accepted yourself. And as an artist who's public facing, the amount of shit that you've got to deal with, I mean, it's mind blowing. That's exactly why I am on this side of the, you know, because I feel sometimes very, very overwhelmed by how artists have to get that thick skin. And then when they are so tough and too confident, then people are like, but you're being too tough and too confident.
Oh, yeah, you're cocky.
Yeah, you're too cocky.
Be humble.
You're too sure. Yeah. So be humble. And then you go humble and they're like, hey, where's your confidence, man? Like,
yeah, you're fake, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know. I mean, the good part of this whole project is like, we have always presented ourselves on an honest way. Like, we didn't create a persona or like another character like that we kind of like go when we go on stage or when we write. It's just like, Heinz is a natural band and Heinz are Adi, Amber, Anna and Sissy, you know, that's it. Like, that's us and that's the band. So like, in that sense, it's just refreshing, because when it's like, oh, you don't do that well, you don't do that, whatever. It's just like, yeah, because I'm a human being and
right.
I'm not perfect and whatever. But totally. I mean, just the fact that we named our first album Leave Me Alone. Guess why? You know what I mean? Guess why we're saying that? We're saying that to everyone. Like, leave us alone, because we are doing something we like and it's actually successful. Obviously, that's not as important as ourselves liking it, but it's like, it is working out. And then everyone was trying to like give their opinion, like, maybe you should do this or that, or why do you dress like this? Why do you say that? And she's like, just leave me alone, because I'm doing something that I like and I'm enjoying. So
and
leave me alone.
And there's also a cause for like figuring out your own shit sometimes. Like, when I love criticism, I am a critic, you know, in terms of the arts, but I also love it. Like, you are welcome to give me your feedback if you are like a trusted source, like you're close to me, or 100%. You're somebody I admire. But if it's like unsolicited and coming from like a stranger, which I often get it too, when I run this podcast, I'm the host, it's my show, there aren't many female hosted music podcasts, and often the response is always like, oh, I hate her accent, or she's talking, and it's literally like, it's my show. What? How can I not talk? But they would never say that to a man, ever. Like,
I hate that.
You never say that to a man. And there is a point where you're like, great, thank you so much for your feedback. But also, fuck you. I am doing
this. Because
I love
that
it.
Is shit. Yeah, I mean, it's just obviously criticism. Like, it's good when you want it and when you want to get better and when you're on a place where you're like ready. Like,
were
okay,
ready?
What can I do better?
Mm.
You're ready for it. But sometimes, because we're not superhero, no one is a superhero that I know. No one is 100% always ready to be criticized, especially now being female on a band, like about everything that we do. Like it's just now with social media and stuff, it's just like such a, you need to know about politics and about environment and about clothes and about culture and about rescuing dogs and, you know, like everything. And obviously about music and like, it's just, it is a lot. It is a lot to be in the spotlight and to be perfect, but I kind of like had to like learn, like, for example, when we're like doing an interview and a lot of times it happens when someone is like, oh yeah, you remind me to this band and I don't know that band. And they're probably an amazing band that it's the most classic thing in America, big for the culture and stuff, but I've never heard of it because I'm bad with names and I don't remember names.
But also
of bands.
You don't need to know every
exactly.
band. Like, it's not your...
So, it is just relaxing and just being like, oh no, I don't know it, and trying, and you know, it's like an exercise of like, I'm not stupid because of not knowing that. I know a lot about this and that, and I don't know a lot about a lot of other things, and that's fine. That's fine, you know?
Well, there's no pretense to that, right? Like, that's my approach with everything always as well. It's because I'm in a position where I'm asking people questions, I continuously try and be curious, because if you're talking about something that I don't know anything about, what is it good if I lie and say, oh, yeah, totally, like, I know it. Because all it's going to do is limit my conversation. It's going to cut it short. Because what goes on from, oh, I know, like, there's nothing, you can't have a conversation. And then after that point, that you have to change the subject, which then puts the person that you're talking about into a position where they might feel stupid for bringing it up, or
or you didn't care or something. Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's also, again, with music discovery, people sometimes are a little bit, hesitant to listen to music that has anything other than English or a marimba or an African instrument or something in there that's a little bit unusual. But that's why I do love that, you know, you said in the beginning of this conversation that you've also incorporated Spanish lyrics, which I think is like, but they're not overwhelming. They fit completely into the conversation that you're having on the record.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, it felt obviously when we were talking about it before I started writing this album, it's something we wanted to do. We were like, like, we didn't know how we were going to do it, like maybe a whole song or like half of the album or just translating some songs, like we didn't know. And then while we were doing it, because Sissy and I, we both write the lyrics kind of like at the same time, so like we meet and like we start writing together, it came like pretty naturally, because like obviously, like English and Spanish are such different languages, right? Like in the terms of like the amount of words, the phonemes we have, how they sound in different tones. Like there's just like this actual like kind of technical stuff that is very different apart from the meanings, obviously. So it's just like sometimes it felt so much better to sing in Spanish. Like it sounded perfectly right when it was just like in the backup of the chorus, or just like in one of the verses, yes, and one no, and like even the combo of both at the same time, just like it felt like surprisingly natural for us to start writing in Spanish and kind of like to do a mix of both.
Do you feel though that now, in a way, going back and playing in your hometown, do you feel like those songs might get a little bit more airplay? Do you feel like people might feel...
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, there is still a lot of people in Spain that don't know how to speak English, like on a very serious level. But 100%. We played, actually, we did like a very tiny show yesterday, like a kind of like a promo thing in here in Madrid. And like already everyone was singing Good Bad Times. And like the Spanish part, like obviously it was like really, really shocking to me, because obviously it's the first kind of the first times we were playing the songs and they already knew all the lyrics. And like,
oh, but it's so
it
catchy.
Was cool to hear them in Spanish, though. It was super fun. And yeah, like our labels actually are telling us like how like Spotify and I don't know, like all these like big platforms are like really like helping us with the Spanish songs, because he's like, of course, I mean, if people can understand it, people can sing it, and they're gonna like you better, right? Like, it doesn't have to be always like that, but it helps if you understand it. So yeah, totally, it's great. Like, we didn't do it for that, but it's great to see that it also comes.
That's happening.
Yeah, it's happening.
Absolutely. When you guys all first got together, you mentioned now that it was the first bands that you had all individually ever been in.
Yeah.
So do you remember the first concert that you all played together, like the very first performance?
Of course, I remember. Yeah, it was crazy. It was at this like kind of like a contest of bands, like bands that were starting, like upcoming.
What do they call it? American
Battle
of the Bands. Yeah,
kind of like that. Yeah. So it was just like basically really, really new bands that had like almost nothing recorded and stuff. So you were kind of like pre-selected, and they gave you, if you were pre-selected, you had like 2 months of a studio. Sorry, of a rehearsal place for free, which is a lot. So 2 months of rehearsal for free, and then we all played in kind of like a all-day year in little venues around the city. So first of all, when we were pre-selected, we were a two-piece. Like, we weren't already a four-piece.
Was it just you and
me, Cici?
Cici, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so just us, okay? And we had written like 4 or 5 songs or demos, like not even finished song. So suddenly we get pre-selected and we're like, oh, fuck, now we have to play a show, you know? Like, it's going to have to happen, and it's only 2 months. So we started like looking everywhere, obviously, like, because we wanted to be like a four piece and we wanted it to be all girls. And it was really, really hard back then to find female musicians. Maybe not because they weren't, just because they're not on the spotlight, right? So it's like, if you don't know them, you don't know them. So we asked Adi, who was a guitar player, and like we begged her, please play bass with us. Even if it's just temporary, like we need to play the show, do it for us. And she was our best friend, so she had to say yes, we forced her. And then we found Amber that knew how to play drums. She actually was the best musician out of all of us back then, because she had been in classes for like quite a while. And she automatically joined. So like the day we met her, the day after, we're already rehearsing with her. So we had those 2 months to kind of like put up a show that was kind of like 30 minutes long, because obviously not even the songs were enough to fill up the kind of like the stage that we had, the stage times. So we kind of like wrote little demos and like parts of songs and stuff. And while we were rehearsing for that, we released 2 songs. So the first 2 songs that we ever released, which were Bamboo and Trippy Gum. Mm-hmm. And Bamboo automatically started getting like plays in BBC6 and like getting us interviews, and like it went mad from nowhere just because of the internet. Like, we didn't even have promo pictures or literally anything, like not
so wait,
ready
did you
at all.
Upload it to like SoundCloud? How did you
Bandcamp, which is even older than SoundCloud. we just put them there, literally there, and like someone from the NME heard it, liked it, and did like a tiny review. And then someone from Line of Best Fit did that and did a little bit of a bigger, and then DIY, like just all this like British press.
I love that.
Was trying to like get interested on us, and we were like really overwhelmed just by the fact that we had to play
actually
in a band
do
together.
Something now.
Like, now we have to do that. And like 2 weeks before of that show, our label, Lucky Number, like our UK label, they were like kind of like chasing us because they wanted to be our label and stuff. And they were like, well, where can we meet you? Where can we see you live? And we're like, we don't know. And suddenly they found out we were playing in Madrid, and they were like, okay, we're booking flights. We're coming.
We're coming.
And we're like, what? Our first ever show, which is already like, you already have all the pressure of just like having your best friend. And you know what I mean? That's even worse than playing for unknowns. It's like playing for all your friends that you've been seeing in bands forever, and that kind of like helped us out in the beginning, so just like your friends that know that you've been trying to start
a band.
So yeah, and obviously it was sold out because it was free, because it was a contest. So it was just like mad, but it went so good. Like, I remember it, like it was so much fun. Madrid crowd is really, really good in the sense of like, it's everyone loves dancing, so it's like as soon
they
as you start like
fun.
Yeah, as if you put like a fastest beat, they're going to start dancing, you know, and it went great. It just felt really good.
Is there any sort of like pre-show ritual that you all adopted before that show that you still have now? Like, is there something that you picked up as you, what's the last thing that you do just before you go on stage?
The four of us, we're like, kind of like go into like, kind of like rugby players do, you know what
yeah,
I mean? Like
a scrum.
Yeah. So we do that, and we say to each other, like, we're the shit, and like look at each other kind of like in the eyes and just say that as if we were just like, I don't know, cheerleaders or like rugby players, like, yeah, we're the shit, and then we just like run on stage.
Do you feel like that energy is needed to just ground you all so that you are all in one spot, you know? Yeah,
especially like when you start being like more kind of like a professional musician, right, where we play so many shows in so many like different places, different moods, you're tired, you're happy, you're excited, you're drunk, you're, you know, it's just like every time feels different, literally feels different. So it's just like, I personally really need that mini moment of like just hugging and being like, okay, it's like the glue that's putting us up together. Like, absolutely, maybe you were doing an interview 10 minutes before, or like having a phone call, or just you're sad that day or whatever. It's just like, it's the moment for me where I've totally focused and I'm like, okay, this is us. We're doing the same. We're great. We can do it together. We've done it a million times, and today is going to be just another great day.
So when you were younger and watching bands perform live, as a writer yourself, as a songwriter now, I know that you and obviously CC write the songs. Did you ever see a performance that stuck out to you? Maybe watch an artist live where you really connected with their writing, you know, not only lyrically, you know, melodically as well. Was there ever a show that really stuck out for its performance, for its writing, for its writer, just everything?
Like back then when we started the band, we were obsessed with like kind of like garage music, because mm-hmm. I think in garage live shows the energy is so wild, and like mush pits and like sweat and like dance, like there's so much energy going on that we were just like absolutely like in love with that whole feeling. So like the Parrots, our friends from here, they used to play like almost every week, and as well Los Nazis, which is another Madrid band, so them too were like kind of like our big brothers and heroes at the same time. And then just like all these like kind of like North American Burger Records wave, where it's just like the Black Leaves and Ty Segall and like Mac DeMarco too and stuff, like in that sense of like live shows and like music and sound, it was totally that. And then I really remember like stuck in my head the first year, so when we were starting the band but we hadn't like released anything yet, we went to Primavera Sound, so like the festival. Yeah,
the best and festival in
it's
the
so
world
fun, right? Yeah. So we went there and we saw Haim with their first album. Oh. And like, I was shocked by the power that they radiated. Like, I was seriously, like, I remember after the show, like, looking at each other. And like, it's the most like crazy part about it is like the music that they do, I don't connect that much with it. Like, I like it, but it's not the thing that really like made me say, wow. That was like their live show. Like, I was like, fuck, it's just, I guess because obviously we hadn't seen that many girls on stage, and like especially because we like garage music, and like that was, as most of genres, male based, right? Mm-hmm. So we hadn't seen that many shows with women on stage, and like women being like so powerful and cool but natural but like fun. Like, I don't know, I was just like in shock when I saw them, and I kind of like obsessed and started like watching all their YouTube videos. I literally right now can probably like remember, and like again, it's like, it's just because it's someone like me, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a woman.
So
it's just, I was relating so much, and it wasn't even about the music, which is the craziest part. It was just like, wow, and they do that. And it, like, I was just obsessed for a little bit.
Do you get a chance though, because you have toured so much over the last few years, and even just talking to you, I think we started talking about tours this year, coming, you know, all the tours coming up.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a chance to meet these people, these idols? Like, have you met any bands that, you know, you've been able to watch from the side stage, or watch them live from the, you know, from the pit or something, and a band that's really affected you, and, you know, a band that you love? Have you been able to do that much?
Oh yeah, 1,000,000%. We've seen them and met them all and probably played with them all. Yeah. I mean, obviously this was like 7, 8 years ago, right? So it's just like, we've seen a lot and done a lot since then. And obviously the feeling is not the same, but it is cool. You know, it is very nice, especially, well, I don't know if Sissy told you, but literally this Monday, we were playing with the Strokes in Belfast.
Wait, this coming Monday?
No, the one before. The one that just happened, like 5 days.
Oh my God. You played with the Strokes.
But wait, but even more, because the week before we played, so we played this Monday, we played Belfast, and the week before we did Paris and London, and in New Year's we did New York. So which is like, that has been the wildest in terms of like heroes and stuff experience. Because like, on a bad way, when we started the band, we started meeting our heroes and the bands we liked and stuff, I often was getting like disappointed. And like, it made me really sad, because like, obviously, when you love someone and you love someone's music, you want them to be incredibly awesome, you know, in person. And suddenly, like, I got really disappointed because some of them were like big dickheads. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, they were like treating us like fucking like garbage.
Who are you?
Yeah, like, who are you? Why are you smiling? Whatever. Like, you don't belong here. You know, not like directly. Obviously, no one worded that way. But. You know, that's how you felt, you get that vibe.
Yeah, you get, I know what you mean.
Looks and vibes are way more than words sometimes. So I started just like secretly in my head, because like we kind of have meet everyone that we look up to, and except the Strokes up until this year. So mentally I was like, I don't think I want to meet them, you know, like there's so many stories as well about the tickets are like biggest rock stars ever, like, which they are. And I was like, I don't want to meet them because I don't want to get disappointed. That's fine. I love the music. I don't want it to be ruined for me. I don't want to stop listening to the Strokes because they're dickheads. So I don't want to meet them. But then obviously we got these offers, and like we met kind of like briefly in New York, and then that was really brief. So it was fine. And then these tours, like these shows that we just did last week, were kind of like smaller, and like it was in, you know, because they're American and this was Europe. So it wasn't like there wasn't that many like friends of them, or I don't know what happened, but like we got to hang with them every day after the shows, and they are so fucking normal and so fucking nice and humble. I don't know if it's because they're a bit older or just...
Yeah, I've heard like Julian's band played at Iceland Airwaves, like not last year but the year before, and I was shooting Blood Orange, and I turned around and he was standing right next to me. Like he had like Slinky wormed his way through the crowd to get to the front row of Blood Orange. And like no big band does that. Like they feel like they're too pretentious. They don't want to like rub shoulders with, you know, us mere public, you know. But he was right up there, right in the front, because he obviously was just like us. And they are, everyone. You are. I mean, you have people who think the same for you. You know?
That is so funny to me. Obviously, like when people are like, yeah, but wait, you're drinking cans in the street? I'm like, are you kidding? Like, buy me one or I'll buy you one, because you need to stop thinking I'm not the person that I am, which is exactly you with a band.
Did you get to ask any of them, not advice because that sounds silly, but did you ask them about their process or about like, not tips as such, but did you get a chance to connect with them in terms of talking about their music and their relationship toward performance at all?
No, I mean, we talked, I mean, they brought up some of our stuff and we talked about us, and like they said what they liked, and you know, like they kind of like complimented some songs or whatever. But no, we didn't want to kind of like cross that line and be like too much, because obviously there has been stuff going on between them, right? So we didn't want to like be too like, so what's this and what's that, you know? Which is like, we'll talk about whatever.
Has anyone given you advice, like from a band that you know, really idolized, your kind of hero? Has anyone given you some good tips or told you, you know, something that's kind of stuck with you?
I mean, probably, but I don't remember. The thing is, like, I think this, I don't know how to word this without sounding like cocky, but like a lot of bands are impressed by our live show. So impressed on the sense of they always come and they're like, oh my God, like your energy is so powerful and like you really enjoy playing. And like, I feel it's a little bit sad, because I feel like most of them are saying it because they are tired of playing, you know, and they see us and it's like, oh, I remember that this was supposed to be fun, you know.
But you ignite that out of them. I mean, your live show is something I haven't seen. You know, when I first saw you all those years ago, I think it was at Primavera,
Really?
And I remember no one was, you know, there was a lot of like UK press about you, and it wasn't so much in the US yet, but you had kind of taken over the UK and the rest of the world. And the crowd was like running. I remember they ran from like, and you played early. It wasn't too late.
I know. But definitely. We always kind of like get bad slots in Spain.
So on the road, because you guys obviously had a run where you're just on the road all the time touring, do you have like any habits that keep you from feeling in that whirlwind of like drama and lack of sleep and lack of routine? Do you have anything that grounds you to make you feel a little bit more human while you're out on the road? Like what are the things that you use, like the tools and resources that you use to make sure you're okay to function and write songs and play live?
This is very personal. Okay. So I can only talk about myself, but
yes, of course.
It makes me really happy when someone we know, like a friend or like, obviously, especially my boyfriend, when he comes, like it makes me feel like a human again. You know, it's just like, oh, we can talk about something else, because, you know, when you're touring, you're with the same four or six people with crew constantly, literally constantly. And like the most dangerous part of touring that I have realized on the bad way is like you get like kind of like stuck in this like madness of like excitement and being tired and partying and being hungover and then playing shows and like selling out, or just, you know, it's just like a lot of adrenaline, but like very tiring and very like high speed things. That then afterwards, when we came to Spain and like actually had a break, it was pretty tough to me to like get used to a chill,
normal life, which
is actually the life I prefer, you know, not in the sense of like, oh, I'm not made for this, I'm only made for rock and roll, you know, not at all.
Course.
It was just like, you're missing something. And like, when you tour so much, you actually are not there for a lot of big moments of the people that you love, or like, fucking, I don't know what's happening in the government in Spain, like, you know, from more personal to more like generic stuff, like you're missing things. And then because it's so hectic being on tour, you kind of like think that nothing else is happening, like in the sense of that's exactly what I mean. And it is dangerous. So for me, like I've been like this whole year, I've been like kind of like painting home. So like I'm already like planning on like, okay, maybe these colors I can get, and like I'll mix them and I'll sketch it in the van. Like I'm already kind of like making plans of how I can do more like chilled and things that I actually like doing as a human and not just as a body that's constantly traveling.
Right. So like bring it on the road.
Yeah. Or like listening to podcasts really like relaxes me. And like, obviously you learn so much, right? And it's just interesting. And like, yeah, just reading podcasts and like hopefully if I can paint a little bit.
So when you get to a new city, do you have, because I know your tours are always so packed, like I just remember when I was covering you at the one festival, I was like, oh, they're playing at the next one I'm going to cover. And it was like, okay, you're gonna, and you just even mentioned like Benny Kassim and Mad Cool and like all those ones that are all around the same time. So when you get to a new city, you might not sometimes have the chance to look around, but when you do have like a day off, what's the first place that you go to find out more about that city? Or what's the first thing that you guys tend to do?
Definitely walk.
Yeah.
Because that's a big luxury for anyone that's in a band, because we don't get to walk at all, like constantly sitting down and just waiting. Usually when we get days off, unfortunately, is because the driving times are so long that they need to be split in 2 days without a show, because we wouldn't make it on time. So it's never like day off to relax, unfortunately.
Right, it's just day off logistically, because you can't, robot can't drive. Yeah.
Exactly. But if that happens, we always try to like go to like a flea market or something outdoors. And like, because I think it's also because of being Spanish, like, and from Madrid, we're used to like walking everywhere. Like, we're not like, when, for example, when we go to America and everyone is like, oh, we will Uber there and that, when we're doing press and like our label is like booking Ubers, we're like, but wait, it takes just 5 more minutes to walk. Can we actually walk? And they're like, oh yeah, you want to walk? Like, as if it was weird. It's like, obviously I want to like see a little bit, breathe a little bit, get the sun in my face.
I know, you know, there's something about like having that. It's not only having the air and like feeling your body move, but you're also then taking the time to see things and
exactly
when you navigate. Like your brain then is locked into that navigation,
yeah,
as opposed to like being mindlessly just like a numb sitting in the back of an Uber.
Totally, you know? Totally. But yeah, that's what we try to do. Just like walk.
So in terms of like, okay, so now you're prepping to go on tour. Do you have a country that you haven't gone to and played in that you, because I want to look at your set list now where you have played, because that is like, you've played in so many, like you even mentioned Japan, like you've played in so many places around the world. Is there a country that you haven't played yet that you
Haven't played nowhere in Africa, actually, and I haven't either personally been. And this is going to sound funny, but I love traveling, like on a touristic level.
Yes,
and yeah, like it's Africa. It's somewhere I would fucking love to go. And I know it's a lot to say Africa, right? Because it's just like saying
it's
America.
So much. Yeah, exactly.
So much and so different. And I was talking actually yesterday with like a friend that I just met, and Russia, he was from Russia, and I've heard apparently there's a really super cool crazy scene in Russia, like of fans that go to shows, and because they don't get that many shows
whenever
a band is playing.
Yeah,
wild, is it?
Well, look, I mean, I just looked now, okay, so I don't know how accurate this is, but you've played more in the United States than anywhere else, which is
probably
crazy. The UK is second, obviously Spain, and then Germany.
Where do you see that? How do you see that?
I went on to, so if you go to Setlist FM, so Setlist.fm.
Wait.
Wait, you don't know about Setlist FM?
No. Oh, I'm clicking.
This is
right
so
now.
Funny. Okay, no, this is going to be amazing for you. Okay, so Setlist FM is this, it's basically Wikipedia for bands touring.
What?
So it shows it. So people, it's user submitted. So when fans go to your shows, they'll upload what your set list was to this. You see how many times you tour in the year. Obviously, sometimes you can't.
Wait. There's actually every show we play, like the one I was telling you in Belfast, it's right there.
Yeah. So, of course. And then your first show, I don't know if the Battle of the Band show will be on there, but it shows you if you go into. Yeah, I'm just looking through. If you go to like artist statistics and then into tour statistics, you can go into song. Like you've played Bamboo 123 times.
Oh, definitely more than that.
Is there a band that you feel really close to that you would love to tour with?
I would actually love to tour, obviously, more with the Strokes or with Arctic Monkeys.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like this is something, I don't know why some people think Arctic Monkeys are lame. But yeah, Alex Turner's like melodies and lyrics are to this day my like on my top five ever writers. And I love it. I love the songs and I love the lyric. Like I love a lot of them. And I would just like to like get to hang with them.
Yeah. And lastly, why do you fit into this lifestyle? Like why is it so? Why does it resonate with you?
I think. Because I'm brave and we all are in the band. And, you know, to like any change, like social or musical change, first comes with someone crazy doing something brave, you know? And I think we all are. And we've been since we started the band. So it's like, it's refreshing and we don't overthink too much some stuff. And especially more on like a feminist way, I think. The fact that we present ourselves like we are in reality, it's really important that women like us, which are normal women, get in the spotlight, because it's like we get a lot this vibe of like interviewers or like just people saying, whoa, you all drink and you party and you smoke. And it's just like, yeah, like any other of my girlfriends.
Yeah,
you know,
like normal.
You know, I'm not an alien. I'm not doing anything that none of my friends are doing. But it's just like right now, I think like women in music, they're mainly like kind of like represent in the pop culture. So it's more like super beautiful and like always perfect and slow and like you know, just like everything is kind of like really taken care of, which is awesome. Like, I'm not at all criticizing that. I love that. But it's, I think that creates a little bit of a false reality of women. And I think it's important that, you know, women like us, normal women, get shown. And it's just like everyone gets used to the fact that we can also yell. We do also sweat and swear if we want, or just speak our truth.
This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kibble. We'd like to thank Dean Berger and Daniel Brater for additional music, as well as the Consequence Podcast Network. Hey! If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us, and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod, and generally just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already.
Consequence Podcast Network.